Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Welcome to the podcast, Conscience That Made Us. Interviews and stories, tales from the bus. We love taking you back to when it all went down. The greatest live shows and that cheering crowd sound. It's Concerts, Concerts That Made Us, ConcertsThatMadeUs.com.
Welcome to Concerts That Made Us. We are the government. The G-O-V-T, we just dropped an album called Friendly Neighborhood Conspiracy Theories. Check it out on all major streaming platforms. And right now, we're going to be delving deep into what that means with the lovely Brian.
That was just me and my naivety. I I don't know where my head's at lately. I'm just a devil. Well, I'm just a devil for you.
Matt and Andrew, you're very welcome to Concerts That Made Us.
Thank you so much, man.
It's great to have you guys. Now, I'm looking forward to diving into your music over the next bit. So you guys released your debut album on the 26th of January. It's called Friendly Neighborhood Conspiracies. What can you tell us about it?
I think it was kind of an accumulation of a bunch of different damage control situations in our case, man. We started out as a three-piece punk band called Maddie and the Cartoon Graveyards, and then parted ways with our drummer and friend Vessel, thus becoming this like rocktronic outfit we find ourselves in.
We're just two dudes now.
Yeah.
We're not gonna let the train stop.
Yeah. So it was a lot of emotions going around, and I feel like that kind of helped to jumpstart the finishing of this album.
Right. You've saved me a couple of questions already. Later on, I was going to ask about the punk history, but it's good to know. The name Neighborhood Friendly Neighborhood Conspiracies, I have to ask, I'm sure many listeners are wondering, are you guys a couple of conspiracy nuts?
I am huge conspiracy nut since the dawn of my existence. I can remember always, you know, the big question mark question, everything. And I think over the years, the decades, I'm a bit of a conspiracy nut. There's not a single conspiracy theory on the earth that I don't know about, or at least I've heard about. But I would say that the way it bleeds into the album would be more just the craziness of what the world is right now and how that is juxtapositioned and plays out in our lives with certain scenarios and just things that happened, and how do you make sense of this lens of reality that we have just been given? I don't know. And then that whole conspiratorial, like, oh, what the fuck is going on? I don't know.
It's also quite from a song that we it's actually our next single coming up. It's called The Game. There's a line in it that goes, "Friendly neighborhood conspiracies got me wondering what to believe." It's the whole song is about fake news and what can we truly trust in today when it's so saturated with existence is saturated and kind of in unison with social media these days in the ways that we communicate and stuff. So I think it also leads to that in a nutshell.
I like it. Not to get off topic now, but I can't move on without asking, what's your favorite conspiracy theory?
You go first, man. I have to think about this.
My favorite conspiracy? Man, I've always been more interested in the cryptozoological side of things, so I'm into my ghosts and monsters and the fact that specifically the American government has covered up so much alien activity on the planet.
It's a good one.
So yeah, that's my one. I'm aliens and monsters and ghosts, man.
That's good. I don't know. I would say, not that I'm a believer at all in any of the following conspiracy theories. It's good to just touch base on what is in the zeitgeist of the conspiracy world. But the one that's really, really, really quite interesting is space is fake. There's an ice wall around the world and we're all controlled by lizards. That whole nutshell one. That's a tangent. You know, if you're keen for a good night of YouTube algorithm, what? Then you just go into that realm, and then yeah, you'll be a changed human. Not saying that one believe in it, but good perspective. Like,
this is pretty much music as well, just psychobabble, man.
not want us in an Irish bar sipping whiskey the whole time.
In any bar,
they'll just by 4 o'clock just go.
Sounds like it'd be an interesting night though. Interesting conversation.
Yeah, we should organize it, man.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll hit you up, dude.
Yeah, you'll either come over here, sure, to a real Irish bar, or I'll head over to South Africa, and I'm sure there's Irish bars there.
Oh, yeah. Man, there's all sorts of bars this side.
Good to hear. So back to the album then. How did you approach the recording and the production?
I'll take the start of this one.
Yeah.
So as we mentioned earlier, we originally started as a three-piece and therefore recorded most of the album initially with this very like stripped down kind of
raw punk.
Yeah, like folk punk energy, but all very, very rough around the edges, which is kind of what we were going for. And then with the change in lineup, we were kind of forced into a spot where either we could try replace our drummer and best friend, who had become like part of our family and still is, or we could lean into the fact that we did now not have a drummer. And so we decided to pump out the filthiest backtracks we possibly could with live instrumentation and vocals and stuff. I think that process kind of opened us up to, whereas we were kind of defined in sound, now we could explore something like a soundscape of influences, and every song on the album is essentially a journey of its own, but that's to thank for our great producer Joe Ellis, who did some black magic.
No, definitely, because that's I think why we stuck to this term rocktronica, because it's predominantly rock songs, you know, it follows that structure of a rock or a punk song. But now we added this entire, kick, hi-hat, say, backing support, but with any element that we can think of that would alleviate the song. And we also play live instrumentation in a live show. And now this is also something so new for us, because we've been making music for years, but you always stick to the bass, drums, guitar,
it works,
it's great. And now for the first time we were in a position where like, shit, now we have to go on stage, there's no drummer, there's two dudes, we have to sell it to the audience that there is no drummer. By song two or three you should completely forget it, and you're so involved in what am I looking at on stage. So it forced us to go into this theatrical space as well.
Yeah, we move a lot, man. Like he's gotten himself into some medical drama because of the way we go on.
I like my headbang. My headbang a lot.
You dislocate your neck, dude.
You gotta sell it, man, because there's no drama. But it's still fucking loud, like face melting. So now it's only two dudes doing that, and it can get weird if you're not like leveling the music at the same time as a performer. And I think that placed us in a very fun position where we didn't even know that was going to be the case till the first show.
Yeah.
Because I think we could practice a day before our first show where we looked at each other in the eye like, okay, cool. This is not we're gonna go with it. We're the ears and like, let's go, play a set. And then when we got on stage and we actually did it, we just both matched that we have to be as loud as the music right now and sell it for 45 minutes, which it's always there in a normal band setting, but now it's like, wow, consciously, let's go. And that makes it a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it sounds it. But the only thing I'm thinking is, you know, when you add elements like that into a live show, it kind of raises the risk of technical difficulties.
Dude, yes, that is a great observation, Brian. We have had our fair share of like technical nightmares.
However, you rise out of the occasion every time,
like a phoenix.
Like a fucking phoenix.
Good to hear.
Yeah, but like particularly with our like in-ear monitoring setup, that's what we've had most fleet with at live shows so far. I mean, because we play with a click track, which, you know, we knew neither of us really did before this project.
So it's like, we were just raw dogging it the whole time for 10 years, man. And now the first time.
Yeah, there's this like cowbell that goes off in our one ear. And many of the times, I think it's my specific in-ear monitoring rig model or something that messes with sound engineers, but they just hate me. So we played many, many shows where only one of us had the in-ear monitors going and we just purely look at each other and kind of keep fingers.
It's now, crazy. That is the definition of raw dogging a show.
Raw dog.
Like, dude has in-ears, one dude has click, and like, you go with the eyes, man. It's just like, okay, go. And then you just feel it.
Needless to say, we're a lot closer than we intend to be.
Oh, man. And, you know, the album, when you complete a body of work like that, how do you look back on it in your mind?
That's a good question. I think a lot of the times when you create an album or do music or a song, a single, whatever, it's like for a lot of other people, it's like going to the psychologist or having this cathartic thing happen in your life, the soul journey, or whatever you might associate to that concept of like the hero's journey, achieving cathartic release, going up to the next horizon, whatever. And I think it's the same for an album, that you build it, craft it, cry with it, the phoenix birth out of it, you know, everything you might associate to that. And then eventually you release it, and then it's that like kill your darling sings. It's like, it's gone. It's now out there. It lives, whatever it meant to me or to the space or to everything. It's done. And now you can move on to the next thing. And I think that's the most exciting thing is the next horizon, the next thing. Not taking away from the journey of making an album, but
yeah, I think it's important to focus on the next vibe. I had a thoroughly good time with this album though. Because it took so many, it was more damage control than anything for us. I mean, recording, re-recording, and then kind of making peace with this completely new direction of music.
And also life, man.
Yeah.
Life happens, you know, just sure. in all regards.
Thank God 2023 is over. Yeah.
At this stage, we'll dive into your personal history when it comes to music to give the listeners a sense of where you come from. So I always enjoy asking, can you remember your earliest musical memory?
Oh,
whoa.
I was stealing my mom's like Beatles best hits compilation CD. We had a lot of CDs lying around, and I'm an only child who is kleptomaniac tendencies, so like, yeah, that's pretty much how I got introduced to Brit Rock.
I can remember very vividly. This was the 90s, man. Somewhere a Metallica Black CD featured, and like it was that, and I think like a Green Day CD or something, but I remember the Metallica Black one. And then I would say the earliest music memory that I have still is, I think my father played acoustic guitar for me like way back, like I was 2 or 3 years old. And from that moment, it was kind of the thing that just stuck. But I think I picked up my first guitar when I was 15 or 16. And then from there onwards, the journey hasn't ended yet.
And you know, how do you think your local music scene has impacted your sound?
Woo, dude, loaded question.
I personally think that like there is an entire realm and like alternative scene that most people will never get to experience, specifically in the South African music scene. Like if you do like the more like punky, heavier rock and psych rock scene, there's such an active market going on like under everybody's noses in Cape Town. We've got amazing bands that we have the pleasure of calling our friends, like We Kill Cowboys and Albert Frost, Willem Valsijn. We've got so many like acts that kind of slide under the radar of what they actually play on radio. So I think actively the way we went at it was to kind of create community around our band, which is what I feel the general consensus is for the underground Cape Town scene right now. I've completely lost track. Where was I going with this, man? Trying to actively become part of the scene had a huge effect on me personally, because you're exposed to like the very best, even though they might not be the biggest like radio hit or anything. Like the caliber of acts that we are exposed to at just a normal Thursday night gig in Cape Town is phenomenal. So I think there's that constant feeling of you have to be on your toes and you have to like bring it to the next show, otherwise you kind of lack impact.
Yeah, you're only as good as your last show, man. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I would say the local music industry had a big impact on sound, because we grew up with this immense big wave of alternative, soul freeing, you know, like Emancipate Me from the Chains kind of music and wave of that in the local realm, especially in the language of Afrikaans, and of course in English as well. How that shaped the foreground and the general landscape of the alternative music industry was, dude, massive, tremendous, from festivals and just a lot of international acts coming down, like a really good push for a lot of years. Of course, COVID happened and a lot of other things. It's South Africa. So, you know, TIA, bro, this is Africa. Anything goes. You don't know. 6 weeks, but that's what also makes it exciting. I think when you mix that and you mix what's generally the sound in the current alternative industry, and you try and do something that no one has ever done before, you get up what we tried to invent. It's just like have electronic music, but solid electronic elements and everything, and mix that with like that raw dog energy of just rock and roll, and have a structure to it so that people can actually vibe and join the party, and make it so that like the average person and the music aficionado can go, that was nice. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So we just want to make people dance, man.
Yo, man.
Just let me dance.
I like it. And, you know, it's called Concerts That Made Us. So I have to ask, as a concert goer, what shows do you think have made you?
Oh, I got a lot, dude. So much from life. Seeing Biffy Clyro live, Metallica.
Oh, so jealous of Biffy, yeah. Man. Oh, he knows it's a sore spot.
Trivium, Rammstein, a lot of metal acts. I would say that that was amazing to see that live, and to see the musicianship behind it. That was beautiful. That was definitely something that changed my perspective. Versus, for example, an artist that would travel with a backtrack or of a more electronic DJ setting. So not that there's a problem with that at all, but at that time, many years ago, you know, just seeing the big guns pull out all the stops at a live show really makes you understand what the caliber is on how those dudes operate and how you have to operate to be on the international stage, which I think is eventually our end goal. I think we saw from the first show we played immediately was just like, bruh, this is an international product. We just
not have, to toot our own horn.
Not at all, but like, our mission statement number one, numero uno, is getting ourselves over to just any international scene and just playing the circuit and just go.
The UK scene is specifically like, that's, I feel like that's the direction we're kind of heading in, because if you take something like the 1975.
But we're louder.
But at a festival in the UK, you'd have like something like the 1975, who are fucking amazing. Sorry. A very amazing live. And then on the same night, you'd have like Franz Ferdinand or Biffy or
a little bit of Blood.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like that's end goal, man. Like, the UK has the most diverse kind of, it's so integrated into your society. Whereas I feel like South Africa is in the process of getting there. It's just a matter of like actually bringing the different scenes to light so that, you know, there can be a diverse lineup on a festival, for instance. But yeah, it's in South Africa, you kind of have to lean into the idea that electronic music is huge here. And that's also, I guess, what had an effect on our sound and our choice and direction as well. It's like, electro is huge here, man. EDM and trance especially is massive, and it's for me very like jarring and experimental, considering I have like this like soft rock background for most of my musical existence. But yeah, super exciting as well when you get to the genre bending side of things. Yeah, definitely UK soon. That would be amazing.
That's good to hear. I was just thinking there, you know, I've heard before that, you know, rock in South Africa is such a small community and it's all electronic, like 99% of people are mad into electronic. Do you notice your music appealing more to the electronic scene then?
Man, I've always seen us as a punk band. Like, that's kind of what we, the energy and the
that's the thing.
Message and the vibe that we kind of put forward is very punk, but our execution is very electronic.
Yeah, and raving. Like,
yeah, right. There's a bit of rave in there.
So like, I think what locks the electronic people, or what hooks the electronic people, is the live show energy.
We just want to make them dance, man.
Just want to make them dance. And then if everyone's just like dancing, you know, it's the same rhythmic vibe you'd get at a rave show. You know?
That's primal, dude.
That insane doof, 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 doof kick. You know, it's the same kick. Now we're just flipping a lot of
riffs
in between that, and fuzz bass and some sexy vocals, and make all the ladies go,
yeah!
Oh, man, I have to get to one of your shows. Sounds like so much fun.
If you ever manage to come out to one of our shows, man, I swear to God, I'm going to get you so drunk.
Yeah, we're gonna give you Brandewijn and Coke.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Brandy and Coke, bro.
Oh, nice. Ah.
It's a dangerous drink. It's a wonderful drink. It's an illuminating drink.
Yeah.
I'll jot it down. It has to happen either this year or next year. So, and with your gigs then, is there a gig you've played which sticks in your mind as the most perfect show you've done?
The first one, man. The first one just slaps.
It was just a culmination of like, I could literally have thrown up like post show anytime. And the thing is, our first show we played was us entering for this Battle of the Bands at a local dive bar. Well, not really a dive bar. It's a fully fledged establishment. Stellenbosch.
The local scene.
It's called On Plus, which means like night school. So when parents ask the students in the student town, like, hey, where are you at? It's like night school, you know?
Watching bands.
Yeah. That first round of Battle of the Bands, I was absolutely like mortified at. I was just picturing every possible scenario where like either track could give out or in-ears monitoring wouldn't work or people just wouldn't like it or get it. But we've received a lot of love. But yeah, the first show was just perfect. I'm sure it had its mistakes, but like energy-wise, that was just hands down.
people like vibe. There was even a mosh pit, man. And I feel that's like when you get the mosh pit and the stank fest, you know, like the.
But it's all these kids, man. It's all these like 19-year-old girls who look like they're like they're
going for it.
A slight breeze could knock these little people over, and they are just beating the living shit out of each other.
Like. Yeah, man. Like as everyone had like that three shots too much Jägermeister, but they're going for it, and that was fantastic. And that energy stopped. So I think we just locked in on that. And
yeah, I think that's something we try to emulate with every show. Is like let's make people, like lose their absolute mind.
Nice. And you know, not to get negative now, but to flip it around, is there a show you would say was the worst experience you've had, and how did you overcome it?
Are we thinking of the same show? Was it in Observatory?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So get this, man. Yes. I'm not going to name names because like the owners are actually nice people. And like, it was
wrong circumstances.
Yeah. It was just a bad night for sound.
Doesn't work out that good.
Yeah. Like the feedback on a guitar with single coils was so bad. Like you almost thought you were about to get electrocuted. But other than that, they couldn't figure out in-ear monitoring, but they also didn't account for like time bands need to kind of switch and set up at a show. And basically what happened was because they couldn't figure out our in-ear rig, the sound check took so long that it ate like into probably 60% of our allotted time.
No band on the lineup got allotted time.
Yeah.
So everyone bleeded into everyone else's set list.
So after four songs, and we were like super amped to jam, like four songs in, they're like, okay, guys, you got to leave now. You're like done.
Oh my God.
That was a kick to the face, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once again, like you can't really, I have nothing negative to say about the venue itself, purely because I'm scared that they'll never book us again.
How would you approach it differently then if you were to go back?
Ensure that there is a setup time or just organize to play last.
Or not piss off our drummer until after that specific show where we didn't need track. Like that would have been great.
Yeah.
Now I joke, but we actually have a really great relationship with Vessel. He's actually the featuring artist on our track, The Government. Yeah. If you're watching this, I'm just joking, my dude.
We're really excited for the year. Like, I think our biggest mission is to get abroad somehow, because we're just two dudes. We're just going to get on the airplane and go, Europe!
Yeah. Very streamlined travel.
Yeah, just like, we have a drummer right here.
Don't give away our band secrets, man.
Yeah, you're supposed to keep that stuff to yourselves.
We actually have a little box, like a little jewelry box that we put my phone in when we plug it in. It's the secret's out now.
Secrets.
And it's labeled Secret Government Secrets. Yeah. No.
Oh man.
Thanks for ruining the illusion, Andrew.
And now we just have to find a better illusion.
And you know, before we dive into the last couple of questions, then I know you've mentioned Europe, but what's set in stone for 2024 for you guys?
I think as far as immediate goals go, we're trying to establish because we're so new as a band. Even though we've both been active in the scene for the last 10 years in separate projects, we've only come together now. We played our first gig, September last year? So our goal right now is because we've had to kind of like, we have to cut our teeth now once again. But luckily we're both like pretty savvy when it comes to, you know, what's expected of us as a band. So we need to like, this year, as soon as humanly possible, establish that like circuit that we can just travel through the year once or twice. And our most immediate goal is penetrating, bad word, integrating ourselves with the scene up north in Gauteng, because we're sitting like right at the most southern point where
We're at the tip, bro.
But yeah, so integrating ourselves like up north would be our most immediate goal, I feel. And the music scene up there is now very like metal dominated, indie dominated, which is super interesting and something that I would like to kind of immerse myself in as well.
And then see what the fuck do they think about Rocktronica.
Yeah. We hope you don't eat this.
Punch us.
Well, hopefully they enjoy it. I'm sure they will.
Thanks, man. You see.
And the last couple of questions. So I always finish out with a couple of random fun music questions. I'm intrigued to see your answers now. So if you could see any artist from history in concert for one night only, who would it be?
Ooh, that's a goodie. That's a goodie. Because is that your locked answer?
Yitney, I don't know.
Oh, man. Oof. I would probably like right off the bat, while Andrew's deciding and having an existential crisis, I would probably say Biffy, man. Like, I am absolutely obsessed with them. So they're my living one. My dead one, for sure, Nirvana, man. Kurt Cobain. He had the biggest impact on me in high school, I think. So like, oh shoot, but there's Gaslight Anthem. There's Gaslight Anthem, dude. Oh wow.
My living one is definitely a Gaslight Anthem.
I completely forgot about Fallon, man.
And a band that's inactive. They don't play live anymore, but I would wish I could have seen them. I think it would have been him. Like, just see it. You know, like, grew up with a lot of that.
Funeral of Hearts, man.
Yeah. So I never saw it, but would have liked to see it. But Gaslight Anthem, love to just see that shit live.
The best.
That'll be good.
The best.
That'll be really good.
Have you heard their like History Books album that came out last year, man?
No, I haven't actually.
Do yourself a favor. It is one of the most skillfully put together pieces of music I've ever heard. It's just,
But I have to dive into it.
Yes. Whatever you and Brian Fallon can write a song about it.
Yeah.
And probably Adam.
Good. The next one, so it's a bit of a weird one. If you had to spend 24 hours locked inside a room with any musician from history, living or dead, who would it be?
Ozzy. Hands down, Ozzy, man. Shit. imagine because he's in a room. You know, like he could potentially feel cornered, and I would like to see what the Prince of Darkness himself does when cornered.
That's a really good one.
He'll probably have every drug dealer in the vicinity. Oh, but he doesn't do drugs anymore. 1980s era Ozzy would be.
That'd be dangerous.
That would be the best. Like mullet Ozzy. That was a good time. Oh, I am the kid of delivery, man.
That's such a good question, though.
Yeah, what's yours?
I think of someone that would be funny. Because
what if they turn out to be such a dick?
I don't know. Because what are we going to do? We're going to sit and look at each other. We're not going to sit and practice. We're not going to sit and like do drums. We're just going to have a look and have a laugh. So maybe like Seth MacFarlane.
Maybe you can keep whatever's in your pockets. You know, that could change the game completely.
I would choose Seth MacFarlane. Because he can sing, but he's also funny as fuck. So
that is niche, dude.
Very niche.
That's really thinking outside the box now.
I'll just sit right there and be like, I know you're saying. I don't know.
Oh, man. First time he's ever been mentioned on the podcast as well. Good one. The final one. So what album is your go-to album?
Blood, man.
You know, Gaslight Anthem, handwritten. That's like, a good one. That's a solid album. Like that shit, perfect. I would say that, and there's a few like odd end, like Amaranth or Nightwish. I'm big into the power metal as well. Mm. I can deeply niche that out on like some good albums about dragons and chests and crazy shit like that, but I would say broadly speaking, The Gaslight Anthem handwritten is just
It is beautiful.
It just slaps. It's perfect. It's a good album. Good list.
Shoot, man. I'm just gonna go with my favorite album right now. Because like there's too much going on.
Yeah, what's your favorite album now?
Favorite album right now has to be, man, it's Amel and the Sniffers at the moment. Or Emil. I'm not really sure how to say that. It's this like punk outfit from Australia. They're amazing. The lead singer's got like, oh no, dude, wait, scratch it. Anything but Viagra Boys, man. Yeah. Sorry, Amy Taylor just reminded me that she did a song with Viagra Boys, and Viagra Boys is just the best. They have this live session called the Shrimp Sessions. Absolutely beautiful. Most of it's like improvisational, like jam rock, punk vibes. But they're like a Swedish band, but super left. Super, super dope, man. Yeah, love Viagra Boys.
Sounds interesting. I'll have to check them out.
We have really interesting music.
Yeah, we also listen to Fire Saga.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Will Ferrell in it.
And the Eurovision soundtrack. That's how we every show. But we
Double Trouble, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Listen, guys, it's been great crack chatting with you now. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks a million.
Oh man, thank you so much, dude. Yes, this has been such an easy breezy interview. Like,
it's been really fun, and really looking forward to seeing you in the future, having some whiskey and that thing called Brannevine.
Yeah,
definitely.
We'll have to do it. We'll have to do it.
Makes me wanna.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. And if you're interested in signing up to Bandbuilder Academy, use the link in the show notes below and enter the code CONCERTS and you'll receive 10% off. So, until next time, keep rocking.
Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here.